Thank you for the introduction. Just one correction. I wasn't the publisher at The Economist. I was on the marketing department, but that's, I'll take that. I was the publisher for The Economist. So let me just grab this thing here. So again, my name is James Kalistra. I work with Forbes Media in the integrated marketing department. So what that means is I work as part of a marketing team that supports the media sales team to leverage all of our integrated platforms. So be it digital, print, mobile, social, live events, et cetera. And we basically put together a package to leverage the platforms and help when we work with our advertising partners. So the title of this session, I believe, is engaging with sponsored content on Twitter, which I'm going to get into. But first, I wanted to just talk a little about what Forbes is all about and how we got to where we are today. So Forbes actually started nearly 100 years ago in 1917, and we were really the first magazine to portray the human side of business by telling the stories of the most successful people running companies. And to this day, that mission truly does remain unchanged. We're always looking for the people that are championing entrepreneurial capitalism and putting them on our cover. And but the way that we go about that mission has changed dramatically, the way that we approach it. So we're reinventing business journalism. We're reinventing the way we tell stories in a digital world. We're reinventing the way that we integrate our partners into the platform. So by the mid-2000s, it became quite clear that the media business changed dramatically since when Forbes first started 100 years ago. Specifically, journalism had collided with digital publishing. You started to see hundreds and thousands of blogs and websites because the barrier to entry was just so low, anyone could really create content online. And you started to see digital publishing collide with social media, and people were starting to go to Facebook and Twitter for their content, and they're sharing the content across their social platforms. And now what we're seeing is social media is colliding with mobile. So we're trying to figure out, how do we deliver this content on a smaller device? How do we optimize it? How do we build our ad products to fit these devices? So that's something we're still figuring out to this day. So by 2010, we really had to ask ourselves the question, how does a traditional publisher like Forbes, who built our business on print, how do we survive, how do we thrive, and how do we stay relevant? So what we did was, first of all, I won't get into the whole backstory, but we purchased a company called Truthland, which is a startup founded by a guy named Louis Dvorkin. Louis used to work at Forbes. He moved around a little bit, he was at New York Times, Forbes, and then went into the digital world at AOL. So we really he understood both the traditional game and the forward-thinking digital world, and he started this Truthland startup, which essentially was a content management system that worked with contributors and allowed contributors to be paid based on how well their views did, and it was very integrated with social. So when we hired Louis, we brought him on board as the chief product officer. And Louis did these four things, really. It was really a whole company-wide initiative, started in 2010. But he turned the content model upside down. What that means is, for the first time, he opened up our content management system, he brought the system with him, which they call Falcon, and any publisher or any writer can publish content directly from their phone, and it's very user-friendly. But he opened it up to contributors, so it's not just Forbes staff who are on the payroll. So to this day, we actually have 1,750 contributors all across the world. They're knowledgeable within their own domain expertise, their topic and subject matter experts. They're diligently vetted to make sure that they're publishing content about their subject and it's good content. So he basically changed the labor model and also changed the compensation model. So these individuals aren't on the Forbes payroll. Not all of them are compensated, but a large number of them, I believe 40%, are compensated based on how well their content does. So they're incentivized to get a lot of views and create really good content. We also changed the advertising model, meaning it's not just about ads and banner ads and impressions and ads, but we actually opened up the content management system to brands as well through a new native platform called Brand Voice, which I'm going to get into. So this is Lewis here. And if you ever get a chance to meet him, he's a kind of a legend in the media industry. And we're lucky to have him. And these are the results of his efforts and the entire leadership team. 36 million uniques, that's by Comscore. It fluctuates obviously every month, but that's in the US. Before we brought on Lewis in 2010, it was about 10 million. So as you can see, it's gone up pretty dramatically. Right now, 54% of the Forbes audience is mobile. That includes tablets and phones. So that's huge. And we're starting to push our advertisers a little bit more to buying ads and integrating their native content on mobile as well, not just on desktop. We're typically the number one most shared publisher on LinkedIn. We now have 100 people that have signed on as Brand Voice partners since 2010. We're on YouTube, 37 global local language editions in print, 8 high-profile conferences. And just to touch on this, 6.3 million magazine readers. Might not seem huge, but if you look at our competitors, and this is since 2012, we were flat a little bit for a while, but we really started to see a jump in 2013. And while the rest of the industry and the rest of our competitors were starting to decline across the industry. And I really think that's a testament to the power of digital media to create brand recognition. People are consuming the content online, on their phones, through social, et cetera. But it's really not a zero-sum game. It's not one or the other. People can hear about it through the internet or through social, and then they could say, you know, I really like Forbes. It means it provides value to me, and they're subscribing, and they're getting it the physical hard copies, which is pretty cool. So what is Brand Voice? Essentially, it opens up the platform, as I mentioned. It provides a credible, trustworthy environment where brands can publish content just like the editorial team, the staff members, the contributors. It flows within the same content management system. You can find it through search. Nowadays, everyone's talking about ad blocking, which is a serious problem because, you know, as an ad-supported website, represents a problem to us, but the good thing about Brand Voice and native content is that, especially with Forbes, it's flowing through the same content management system. People could find it organically, so it's not susceptible to ad blockers. A lot of the other publishers, like I worked at The Economist, and the way that anytime they do a piece of custom content, you'll find it in the in an ad, so they'll drive traffic through an ad, but it's not going to be through the same content management system. You're not going to find it organically the way that you would find any other type of editorial content. So we're up to 100 partners, as I mentioned, 6,000 posts, 5 million social actions and referrals. So really, it's really building a lot of scale and reach for our partners. And another great thing about or the way that we approach this is that content is content, Lewis likes to say. And our CEO, Mark Perlis, always says that it's about the equality of content. So just because you're a journalist or because you went to Northwestern Journalism School and you worked for Forbes, yeah, you're smart and you have a great voice, but there's brands out there, there's contributors out there that also have a voice. And we open it up to the brands because they have a lot of extremely intelligent people that they have a lot of resources, and they could fill some content needs where our editors and contributors can't, and they could actually have a voice. And instead of just simply marketing to people, they can inspire them, educate them, et cetera. So how exactly does it work? They get unlimited publishing rights with our Brand Voice Elite program. They get access to the Forbes CMS to publish trusted content across the site. And then, as I said, it's promoted on our homepage and through native ads as well. It's also promoted across the Forbes social platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, et cetera. And we could also do paid promotion across those social platforms and other websites. It's fully transparent. So that's a big thing for us. Not only transparent of who's creating the content, we don't want to try to like fool people. It clearly says everything is clearly delineated, and it says Forbes Brand Voice. And if it's a contributor, we'll say it's a contributor. If it's a staff member, it's a staff member. And if it's Brand Voice, it's Brand Voice. But we also provide real-time data to the Brand Voice publishers. These brands know exactly who's seeing the content. They get monthly reports and quarterly strategy meetings. They know, are they technology decision makers? Are they small business owners? How much time do they spend with the content? How far do they scroll down? What's the scroll depth? They'll also know for instance, they'll know, like, were they viewing it on their phone? Were they viewing it on their desktop? So really try to keep everything transparent and they know exactly what's going on with their content. And that can help them to fully optimize it, as a lot of people have talked about that today. So how do we compare to, just quickly, our competitors in the space? So as you can see, Wall Street Journal is kind of close behind us, but Forbes' mobile audience is larger than the next three competitors combined, which is pretty cool. And another good thing about all this great content, since we aren't necessarily just relying on ads, I mean, everyone knows, like, there's a lot of ad fatigue. People don't necessarily click ads, let alone share them. But with this great content, people are sharing it. We're publishing 300 total to 400 total pieces per day. So it's creating a wealth of information, a wealth of content, and it's getting shared. As you can see, Forbes is oftentimes the number one most shared LinkedIn publisher, which is huge, because LinkedIn is huge for the business space, and that's really what we're all about for the most part. And as I mentioned, the transparency, we tell everybody who's sharing the content, who these individuals are, and how influential they are. We could tell you what their clout score is, how many followers they have. One cool story, we work with Northwestern Mutual, and they're an insurance company, essentially, that they could provide business insurance for startups. So that's why they like to work with Forbes, because we have a lot of entrepreneurs on the site. But they published a story about Drew Brees, who, believe it or not, is actually an entrepreneur himself. In New Orleans, he has Jimmy John's franchises, the sandwich company. He has a couple of those, and he also has a clothing brand. And he's also working with some high school entrepreneurs through whatever the name is, when they work with Junior Achievement or whatever. So he actually shared the article on his Twitter feed, which is really cool, because you never know who's going to share it. I mean, what are the chances that if Northwestern Mutual was doing an ad, even if Drew Brees was in it, there's no chance he's ever going to share the ad. But because it's content, it's credible, it's on Forbes, and it's written well, that's huge for us. So this is quickly our social following. Twitter is the biggest for us, and 8.9 million is across all of our Twitter handles. Our main one has about 7 million, which is at Forbes. And that's up from 70,000 back in 2010, which is a huge, huge increase. So in this day and age, on the editorial side, they're always being taught and trained that, you know, people are consuming content in a new, vastly different ways. They want it on demand. They want it real time. So they're being taught how to use Twitter, how to, every time they post something, put it on Twitter. And then we have thousands of retweets every day. And the cool thing, too, is now, and this is when I'm going to get into the Twitter chat, so we've opened it up. They started doing Twitter, the editorial team. It wasn't even just a sponsor product 3 years ago. They opened up our Twitter stream and allowed the editors to answer questions and the writers using the hashtag AskForbes. So it was kind of an evolution. At first, the Twitter chats were, we would just use random hashtags. Like, the hashtag was, if I were a billionaire, I think that was the first Twitter chat we did 3 years ago. And we asked people, like, if you're a billionaire, what would you do? And use this hashtag. But the way that we started doing it is, instead of, like, letting people post whatever they wanted, we started to allow them to ask questions. So it's almost like a radio show where people call in, but it's on Twitter. So if you just use a hashtag AskForbes, we'll answer your questions and we'll choose a theme. So this is the theme. It usually would align with something that's happening at the moment. Like recently we did Earth Day and Toyota sponsored it. Or it's in line with some type of content that is important or that we've been covering recently. So Symantec was the first sponsor last year, which I'll get into a little bit more, but it was part of a total integrated program that they did with us. And the Twitter chat was all about the security of the smart home and the Internet of Things. Obviously, it's a topic that everyone's talking about right now. And that chat did really well. And we share with them all the stats behind it. So total, I think there were about 1,000 people that basically used the hashtag that day. And it's an hour-long tweet. Starts at 1 p.m. It's an hour-long chat. So it was about 1,000 people. And what we do is, the way that we integrate the brand is, because it's an editorial product, so the brand doesn't get to, like, control what the editors are saying, because we obviously have a clear delineation there. But what we do is, so the night before, we'll we'll tweet out that we're going to be having this chat, and we'll say that it's presented by Symantec. And we also do that in the morning, so the night before, in the morning, an hour before, and then we'll do a wrap-up tweet, like, thanks everyone for participating in this Twitter chat presented by Symantec. The brand can also get involved through using the hashtag as well. So Forbes isn't going to retweet it, but they can see what people are asking by searching the hashtag, and then they could directly respond to these individuals themselves and say, hey, saw your question. We also want to add in this little bit of information. Another cool thing about Twitter chats is just like native, I mean, it is also another native product because you're basically interacting with people in this native environment. You're not trying to throw them off or like it's natural, but also, and it's another product that is not susceptible to ad blockers, which is great for our business as well. So we've done, I believe in 2015, we...
Really quick question.
Sure.
Do the Twitter chats ever turn into, like, articles? Like, do you ever write anything?
After the Twitter chat, we'll do a wrap-up article, and we use Storify, and it'll show... So the article, that's another thing that the advertiser gets is, on the article, they get their ads. So the Twitter chat is $25,000, transparent about that, but it's part of an overall integrated campaign, usually. And then they get their ads on the article that gets posted on the website. But it's basically, the article is just like showing the screenshots from the Twitter chat. So people could just read the whole chat. So that's a great question. And they also get, like I said, their ad on that page. And the page gets promoted on the homepage. I think we guarantee them like 15,000 views to that page. So thanks for asking. So in 2015, I believe we did around 20 Twitter chats total. I think almost half of them were sponsored. Another sponsor that has done a bunch of chats with us, besides Symantec, is Fidelity. They've been sponsoring some retirement chats. John Hancock sponsors some chats around, John Hancock from Boston, sponsors some chats around healthy living. So there's also been some auto companies like Infiniti and Toyota have sponsored chats. Also, Visa recently sponsored one around the future of payments. So they wanted it to be about like their chip technology, but since it's an editorial product. So the way that works is my team will go to edit and we'll say, this is what the sponsor wants the Twitter chat to be about. And they can give us their, like editorial will give us their ideas. And really what they try to think about is like, what's the most mass appeal? What's the biggest draw for our Twitter audience? They know what they're most interested in. And really the most successful ones have been around careers, technology, finance, but also ones of them that have had like the most retweets have been with there was one with Steve Forbes. I think he was chatting about his book, but people obviously like to talk to the celebrity appeal. And then there was one with Steve Case, who is an investor, a big investor guy, and our audience is really interested in, like, they have their own businesses. Like, how do I get investors? So that had a huge that surrounded our under 30 franchise. We have an under 30 event that brings together all the people off our under 30 list. So the millennials are very obviously social and mobile. So anytime we do something around the under 30, it gets a lot of retweets. Best City for Jobs did well. Millennial Job Search did well. Super Bowl Oil. So really the editorial team is always just trying to think about what's the biggest draw? How can we get the most amount of people? Because that's their overall goal, is engaging people, getting them to retweet things. And the chats or the mentions, like the ones that says presented by Symantec, I think there's about 5. We'll tell them exactly how many impressions the tweets got with their mention. And I think they usually get around 100,000 impressions. So the Twitter chat is a great thing because it really drives value for all three of the stakeholders. The audience gets great information. It's great for the Forbes brand because we're opening up the editorial so that the editors and contributors are basically talking to the audience, which is always a great thing. And they'll bring guests along as well, as I mentioned, the Steve Case, and they brought along some different CEOs of companies which have done well. But also it's great for the marketing partner. As I mentioned, they're able to integrate their messaging by using the hashtag as well. They're able to interact with the the audience, we're the Forbes audience in a native environment. So anytime we do anything like the Twitter chat or any type of sponsored content, because that's really what is a sponsored content, on our site, in the magazine, or if we're doing like native brand voice content, we always have to think of these three stakeholders. So, I mean, the audience is obvious. So we're thinking, what's the value to them? How are we going to get them engaged, spend time with this content? How are we going to get them to scroll down farther? How are we going to get them to share the content, which is the ultimate kind of metric to show that they enjoyed it and they wanted to put it out there on their own platforms? And then secondly, what's the value of the Forbes brand? So obviously, as I mentioned, it's a great brand. It's been around for nearly 100 years. We can't diminish the value of that brand. So we have to think about how can it, does it meet the standards, the high quality standards that really the brand has established? And then lastly, what's the value of the marketing partner? Because without the marketing partner, we wouldn't have Forbes. They're the supporters besides the subscriptions in the magazine. They're basically funding Forbes Media. So we have to think of a way to integrate them in a way that doesn't diminish the value to the audience. So it's not all about the marketer, but we can weave in some of the strategic message to try to convey that to the audience, but done in a way that makes sense and doesn't diminish the value to the audience or to the Forbes brand. So the way that our team works, so as I said, we support the media sales team, and we put together, basically, we work off an RFP basis, and the advertiser will come to us typically through their media agency and will explain to us what their objective is. Half the time they're saying to us they want to do something outside the box, something that breaks through, strikes people, but doesn't. But then they're asking us for the metrics. So they want to know something outside the box, but they want to know, they want evidence that it worked last time, which is kind of funny. But this is just one example of working with Symantec. This is what their objectives were straight from their RFP. So when you think, at the time, maybe even still, they're trying to change this perception. When you think of Symantec, you think of virus protection. But they're really trying to change that perception and to be thought of as more, kind of more about information production as a whole. So now, and nowadays, everyone's talking about Internet of Things. So what? How do you protect yourself, like on wearable devices? How do you protect your passwords, protect your identity, email security, mobile security, et cetera? So it's not just, I got a PC, I'm going to put my virus protection on here. So I'm going to show a quick video what we did for Symantec. In this case, they did a couple of things. They sponsored a section on the site, just like a regular section that we have, the security section. So they had 100% share of voice with their ads during the time period. We also worked with the editorial team. So there's a difference between, for us, every publisher does it differently, but there's a difference between our sponsored content and brand voice. So the sponsored content is editorial. They don't have any control over that, the articles, other than what the theme is going to be. And we'll work with the editorial team to come up with a name. In this case, the name of the special feature was like a house special feature section on Forbes. The name was Global Security Update. And we also did a whole bunch of things, which you'll see. It all kind of worked together to create this integrated package that really worked to drive perception of what Symantec is as a brand. So I'm going to just show a quick video. So this is the security section that I mentioned. Trusted destination for high-level tech executives who they're trying to reach. And we give them we use our data partner Moat to show them that it had the interaction engagement was twice as high as the web average. This is a global security update, which is, again, it's editorial content sponsored by Symantec. It's a new special feature that reaches influential technology leaders. We did polls right on there. They could share that across Twitter and Facebook. Had great interaction rate. And then we allowed them to take their brand voice articles and weave them through the editorial special feature. So that was basically a platform where they could contribute their point of view, not to kind of go beyond just what our editors and contributors are talking about. Between May 2014 and March 2014, they had over 200,000 page views and 13,000 some odd social actions. And they sent this is their creative that they sent directly to us. That's their total impressions. They had great interaction rates with their actual creative. We also did print with them, so we did a lot of high impact kind of like gatefold executions that opened up. And it was around very relevant security type of content, technology content in Forbes magazine. They're also they wanted this to be global, so they were also in a lot of our international print editions. We did a custom event for them around cybersecurity. So we had we have a Forbes Insights division that creates their own thought leadership. So we had I believe we might have created a report, but we just had technology leaders come and talk about security in a custom private forum at our old Forbes building in New York. And this is a Twitter chat. So we did a few. I think we did three or four in 2014, and we continue to do them through 2015. So this is the Internet of Things one, and there was one on data privacy. Did really well. So the tweets that mentioned Symantec had 3 million impressions. And then we worked with Flipboard to create a custom mini magazine, custom Symantec mini magazine as well. So as you can see, it was really a full-on integrated program for them that really drove perception in the marketplace. So again, this is their Symantec voice. Besides integrating it throughout the entire site, integrating the Symantec voice content in the special feature, they also got their own Symantec voice homepage that they could direct people to, or once if someone clicks the link Symantec voice, it'll take them there. And on that page, we'll integrate their social feeds if they give us anything from Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, so that that content can actually live right on Forbes. We also allow them to customize this so they could change whatever the headlines are up at the top. They could put big photos. And one thing that's pretty cool is like, we're all about being open, and content is content. So we also would be open, say, if Symantec, for instance, was working, I mean, this wasn't the case, but say if they were working with Wall Street Journal and they created some custom content through them, we'd be more than happy to put that on this page. We've also taken content, we recently did this with Philips, they're working with New York Times. Well, so we took the content, reworked it for our platform, because the way that they do it at New York Times is much different, much more visual, but we do have visual, we have a product called Pulse, which I'm not gonna get into. But we rework it for our platform, and then we'll say at the bottom, this content originally appeared in New York Times, created by Custom Studio. So New York Times is another one where the content, as far as I know, is not a part of the overall like search function or content management system. So this is the global security update special feature. When we do special features now, we can make them, because that's kind of like the trend now. People want everything to be like parallax scrolling and beautiful and visual. We've done a few of those, which they've done well, but at the same time, we're starting to notice that these things are, not that they're a fad, but there's almost gonna be like a content bubble, we feel, because more and more people are looking for these like cool visual executions, but at the end of the day, they're really most interested in how well the content is doing, how much is it shared, and how much is it viewed, and really our bread and butter, our brand voice platform, and our standard content seems to do the best there. But this is the global security update, and as you can see, within the editorial stream, you'll see the Symantec voice articles that will pop up. So they have natural integration within the editorial stream. And then again, we did the Forbes Twitter chat. Bruce Uppen was the guy that was involved in most of them. He's our managing editor for the technology channel. And then Kashmir Hill is a writer. So again, the first one was on security of the smart home. So before I wrap up and open it up for questions, I just want to close with Forbes. We truly believe that we're building a unique content engine for a new era. And all these products that we're building and creating, they really work to fulfill those three needs of the audience, of the Forbes brand, and of the marketing partner. And we believe in this new era that the way that we're driving publishing forward, changing the culture, making it more open, that everything is really just increasing in the right direction. One other thing that I want to mention, so we're always looking for new products and ways to kind of go about delivering the content and new ad products and stuff like that. We, on Friday, our Louis Dvorkin created like a whole, and he publishes articles. If you ever, it's Louis, D-V-O-R-K-I-N. If you ever want to read his articles on the site, they're pretty interesting. He just published one about, on Friday we did like a, it was his idea, but it was called 100% Mobile Day. And everyone from across the company kind of got together and got to sketch out like what their vision would be for making the site more mobile. So, I mean, we relaunched our mobile site in 2011 to make it more responsive, but we're always trying to, like, he's always trying to rethink the article page and how it works when you scroll to the left or scroll to the bottom, and like trying to make it the best user experience on the phone. So they allowed, they broke everyone down into teams, allowed everyone to like sketch out their ideas and then present it in front of the company, which was really cool. So we're always trying to think of new ways to engage with our audience. Obviously, everyone's talking about with Periscope and Meerkat and whatnot, and Facebook has their own product now. We haven't done a whole lot with that, which we're always interested in it. And we just, with our Under 30 Summit, so as I mentioned that we have the Under 30 list every year that started in 2012, and it's now 20 categories. It launched, as I mentioned, 2012, but it lists the people in across 20 categories that are under 30 that are doing like really cool things at a young age. And for the second year in a row, we had our Under 30 Summit in Philadelphia. And as part of it, last year it was just a regular business pitch, but this year we did a contest or a business pitch contest on stage, kind of like Shark Tank, but it was a social one where we only allowed the people that were involved to be like doing some type of social good. So we had about 1,500 submissions, and then we brought up six people on stage, and it was called the $1 Million Change the World competition because the winner got $500,000, and then each of the finalists got $100,000. So it was $500,000, but $250,000 of that was through advertising on Forbes, which is also pretty cool. But what we did we worked directly with Facebook, and we the editor actually live streamed that the winning announcement on stage, and I believe they have like over 30,000 people streaming it, if not more. So that might be the next direction or step. Like if we do that again next year, maybe that could be presented by someone. So we're always thinking of new ways and new opportunities moving forward. So I think I'm a couple minutes under, but I'm gonna open it up for questions. Does anybody have any questions that they wanna ask? This is my information.
Would you like the mic?
So you're very much a global kind of publication. You mm-hmm. translate. How have you found any challenges as you have this very English U.S. sort of website about
right.
how you translate that to an international approach?
Yeah, and we have a lot of people that focus on that, from our COO to people that like that's their job to work with the international edition. So the way that the international editions work, the 37 of them. They're actually franchises, so they just basically license our name, but we work with them. Like there's a conference every year where they come and we try to like teach them best practices because, like for instance, they don't have. So when they pay us to use the Forbes name, and we give them as many tools as we can, like design help and stuff. But they don't technically. They aren't paying. They have to pay extra, I believe, if they wanted to do like brand voice. But a lot of them started just doing it and not doing it really the right way. So we really try to work with them. They also have to pay extra if they want a website. So it's all, and that's kind of like a new direction for Forbes too, is like we were purchased this past year, the majority stake by a Hong Kong investment group, but it's actually been a good thing because they're very hands-off and let us do our thing, but they also know the power of the Forbes brand and they want to continue to leverage that. So there's a lot of things in the pipeline, I believe, that are like licensing deals. But as far as translating, We do have a Forbes Europe, which is in English, that doesn't really require translation. That's like our own product. It's not a licensing deal, as well as a Forbes Asia. So we have a team of like editors and people in Asia that know the language. That's why we have our own. So Asia is very different, I feel like, versus a lot of the other markets. But because of that, we have our own CEO in Asia. We have our own team, and they kind of know all the cultures and the norms there. Same thing goes with Europe. So we have our own like office there and our own team.
And we have their own websites.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's very, very much unique to their own markets. Yeah. We actually find that that the sponsor content does better for some reason, and it's probably because a lot of times we're driving traffic to it because like they get a guaranteed certain amount of impressions, so we'll. Like as part of the package, they get promotions across the site. So it obviously is gonna do well there, but also not just impressions, it actually does better as far as like scroll or as engagement time. I think the typical engagement time across the web, like spending with a web page is like 1 minute and 7 seconds. Our editorial content is like 1 minute and 20, And a lot of times you'll see sponsored content a little higher than that, and brand voice content, people are spending, for whatever reason, like a minute and 30 seconds with it, and they're scrolling down a lot farther on the page. So the content does seem to really do well. Yeah, so we, all of the editors, so all of the contributors, the staff members, and the brand voice partners all have the same data, the same tools. So we use Simple Reach, I believe, to track like who exactly is viewing it. We have a number of data providers that are helping us. So it depends on the campaign, because certain campaigns they want a specific individual, so they'll say, I only want to reach technology decision makers, and they have to pay a higher price for like the CPM. So I don't believe in every campaign we're necessarily telling them like down to like who the individual is, unless it's like part of their package. But if they're requesting it, especially with brand voice, I believe it's part of the strategy sessions, try to help them optimize it. Everyone has the same tools, publishing on the same content management system, so we all have the same, everyone has the same data.
So if the security, the relationship between Forbes and that company that's running the security, what did the setup of creating that relationship, like how long did that courting process take? How was it initiated? And how did it unfold?
Sure, so we have a sales rep for Symantec, particularly that was done out of the West Coast, because I believe their agency is on the West Coast. So it's basically, I've only been at Forbes for a year and a half. I don't know exactly how long Symantec has been an advertiser. I think it goes back farther, obviously, than that. But they might not necessarily every year do as much. This was a big program. I think this might have been the first time that they've really done a huge program like that for us. And I would say, I mean, sales with media sales, I mean, it could be anywhere from like a couple months to a year long process, but usually they're planning far, like way in advance. So this was a 2014 and 2015 campaign. Most likely started talking to them in 2013. The best like people that are really planning in advance are doing it that way. There is time where we have, like at the end of the year, there'll be incremental money. They'll say, hey, we have this amount of money, we want to put it into this. And they'll do like a campaign in December or whatever. For the most part, it's planned far in advance, and it does take a lot of months and a lot of meetings. And so it does take time. I would say it was a combination of, I don't know exactly how it worked because I'm not the sales rep, but I imagine that, so the sales rep, her name's Taryn Moore, she probably contacted them and said, like initially had a set up meeting to like explain who Forbes is all about. That's usually how it works. And then we'll get on the list, like the RFP process list. So then the RFP will come from the agency and they'll say, hey, you know, they build up the relationship in advance and they'll say, hey, really love Forbes. We want to include you on this RFP, and they'll send the RFP out. And then my team gets the RFP and we'll sit down and start to brainstorm with the sales rep. And once we come up with an idea, like in this case, Global Security Update was the idea. Initially, it was actually different. It was like Winning the Cyber Wars was the name, but we'll go to edit. We'll say, we want to do this program, but that kind of got thrown away because like war was like not really a good word to use, I guess. But we changed, like things get changed around. But yeah, the way that works is, the editorial team, as much as we'd like them to like be coming up with ideas all the time, they usually focus on writing the articles and just kind of in their swim lanes. So we're usually come up with the big themes, like we wanted it to be about Global Security Update. Can you guys do this? And they'll say, yeah, we love writing about that. We have so-and-so contributors. He can help us out. We have this guy on staff who writes about that all the time. So basically the only control that the advertiser has is to approve of the name, approve of the theme, but they don't have any control over the content unless it's brand voice content. And the way that brand voice content works is they could either provide the content for us, we can write it for them completely, or it could be a mix of the two.